the NFL podcast. Pumps out so much content.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. I'm Greg Rosenthal in a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Chris Wesseling. It's not the same, is it? It's different.
What's up, Greg?
I thought about, like, should you just go off the top with a totally different start, you know, just, like, blow up the entire machine after six straight years since Dan Hansis is not here today. But, you know, it's, like, only one episode.
You quelled the anarchist in you.
Yeah, that's usually what I want to do is just blow things up. But Dan's busy. Dan has his family in town. And as the intro said, we're pumping out a lot of content. We got three shows this week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We got the Twitter show on Wednesday. Next week, we've got an insane amount of video shows. So, you know, Dan's got to get ready for that. And the rest of us, we're forging on here.
It's not clear to me what aspects of Dan's family is coming. Is it his parents, which I believe it to be, or is it Dan's hidden secret family that he occasionally references if you get a few drinks in him?
It's not the in-laws.
I don't know. I'm just saying there's multiple ways you could go with a Dan family vacation.
Yeah, that's true.
And he'll never listen to this.
So. I haven't even spoken to you guys since Indianapolis. I guess Mark and I texted. I mean, Mark's burning the midnight oil. He was in the office on Sunday. How about that?
There was a scheduling tick in my own mind, having forgotten something that was due tomorrow that is a megaton longer-esque assignment. And so,
okay. I'm impressed. I mean, you're out there.
I mean, it's not impressive that I forgot about it.
No. And what did you? What have you been up to with?
Did some work around the house, fixed up my office. Lakeisha helped me, of course, and then had a rib cage issue, so I went and got that checked out yesterday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a little cartilage issue in my ribs, making sleeping and living difficult.
Yikes. You don't want to spend a Sunday at urgent care.
No.
Is that from stretching or exercise, I'd imagine?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Okay. From way too much exercise.
I mean, I'm sure you were just locked in, though, to watching our friend Daniel Jeremiah move the sticks in the NFL scouting combine all weekend. But, you know, in case we missed anything at all, later in this show, we have our other friend, Roto World's Josh Norris.
That's good because I did not watch a single second of the NFL combine show.
You know what it does have, and especially with DJ in there, with Rich, is – like, I don't like watching golf at all. It is not something that I do. But occasionally, like on a Sunday, if it's in the background and it's a hushed golf broadcast, the Combine has that same sort of hushed feel to it where it's very relaxing.
It's great to have on in the background. My kids kind of like watching it, and they pretend to do the drills. And you just, like, hope sort of that by osmosis some of this information coming at you seeps in. So I had it on. Plus, you know, I noticed when, like, Mike Mayock was in the booth, what that vibe was kind of like. I felt a little bit of like a Drew Bledsoe 2001 vibe. Like he was looking at DJ and being like, oh, I'm not getting this job back.
Definitely dissension there.
It's an event that many of my casual football fan friends love to watch. It's not an event that I ever need to see a second of on television for me personally.
Well, that's why we have Josh, and he's going to head a segment that tells us it's combine takeaways we don't have a strong grasp on. But Josh Norris does, so he can help us. We also have, an interlude, what we're going to call it, a new thing we're trying out, where we're each going to talk about one sporting event that we've been to in person for exactly 1 minute with the backing music of our choice behind it.
I like it.
I mean, I feel like this could be a segment here. It doesn't have to be a memorable sporting event. It could be anything. You just, like... You ever have like one of those long meals where it's like this is like a fancy boy thing, but a long meal where like in the middle of it, they almost like drop a little palate cleanser in the middle to just kind of like refresh you and get you ready on for the rest of it.
That's what this segment is. That's the role of the segment. All right.
The role of the segment.
Why not?
Let's not waste any more time. Kent Brown sitting in for Erica Tamposi today. She's under the weather. Kent, let's do a little news.
There we go. That was a good ball.
Steve, go. He's trying to tell us, guys.
Man, we over here trying to make millions of dollars. He over there BSing.
You
throw
imagine
a damn
you're...
ball so hard.
That was Steve Smith ragging on some poor wide
receiver. Tyree Jackson, the
That's
Buffalo
right.
quarterback.
That's
he said
right.
he was throwing
like bullets to the receivers when he should just be leading them in those drills. He wasn't happy about it. He actually confronted him. He went there during the broadcast and talked to Tyree Jackson while he was throwing.
That's amazing. I mean, that's why you love Steve Smith, whether now or before. Like, he's going to say what he thinks.
They talked about him being put into the booth, like, once DJ's yanked out as a general manager, Steve Smith, and he just said, no, I don't want to do that ever.
He would, like, burn every bridge within a year or two, but it would be fantastic to watch. Let's start our news with Antonio Brown, where it seems like we're starting the news quite a bit these days. Ian Rappaport, our NFL Network insider, reported Monday that the Cardinals, Raiders, and Broncos were the teams that were most intrigued by Antonio Brown, and the Steelers have a level of confidence that they will be able to trade Brown before March 17th when a $2.5 million roster bonus is in. Mark, are you buying it?
Well, I am, because I think it's always would have been the more unlikely scenario that the Steelers just can't find a way to trade maybe a bit of a headache, but one of the most talented receivers of our lifetime. Like, something, someone somewhere is going to think we can take whatever baggage comes with Antonio Brown and make a trade work. I think it just depends. You know, the Raiders, to me, have a lot of ammunition with those second two first-rounders after their number four pick.
When I look at this situation, it seems to make sense trade-wise only for a desperate general manager trying to straddle the line between building and contending. I don't think you want him on a rebuilder, where his mind is up, he wants to play for a Super Bowl. And I don't think you want him somebody with a comfortable GM who already thinks he has a Super Bowl contender, because then why upset the locker room or upset what you're doing by bringing in Antonio Brown?
Because he's awesome.
Right, but you don't know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who is flying off the handle for 2 months straight, is not willing to look in the eye and say, I made a mistake. He's not willing to do any of that. When Randy Moss went to New England, that brilliance happened because he had been humbled by the Oakland years. Without the Oakland years, that would have never happened. Antonio Brown is trying to do this without the Oakland years.
What about do any of those three fit into your...
I think the Broncos do.
Yeah.
John Elway is a desperate general manager trying to straddle that line between building and contending.
You do get the feeling John Elway... Yeah, they're going for a championship, blah, 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 blah. It's like, but something tells me he would just be happy with like a nine or 10 win season where the Broncos get back in the playoffs and lose a game. Like, yeah, that's why you trade for Joe Flacco. I mean, Joe Flacco is not a guy that you're getting to win a Super Bowl. There was quickly a report in Denver that tried to shoot this down. So I don't really know what to believe about these Antonio Brown reports. Mark, you mentioned the Titans have been thrown in the mix too. The Cardinals and Raiders, though, like, That smells fun. The Raiders have three, you know, first round picks, and they're gonna have some quarterback. They're gonna either have Derek Carr or maybe a top shelf young quarterback, or who knows who they'll have. Like, that is a move of like, we're sick of losing, we want to get back into it right away.
I mean, Peter King threw the Redskins in there as well. Think about this though: if you do have in Arizona suddenly Antonio Brown and David Johnson, and potentially Kyler Murray, if it's not Josh Rosen, or Josh Rosen, and Cliff Kingsbury. That, to me, is spicy. I don't hate that.
I'm not sure.
Can their offense do anything without an offensive line, though?
No, but I mean, here's the thing. He's not going – I don't think they want to trade him inside the AFC North. That's pretty clear. They don't want to trade him to New England. So how many of teams – fit the call sheet for him?
Right.
Who really fits?
And for the offensive, like, I'm convinced offensive line is more of a function of the coaching staff and then the quarterback than anything in today's NFL, because you could pick 20 teams, and the Cardinals are among the worst, but you pick 20 teams where the offensive line is a problem. I guess they're hoping that whatever Kingsbury is cooking up schematically is somehow going to cover up whatever their offensive line issues are. And that's a GM, too. He's the one making the call that's worried, got to be worried about his job. So maybe Antonio Brown is a get quick, get right away type of guy.
Well, speaking of the Cardinals, Larry Fitzgerald, who spent several years catching passes from the likes of John Skelton, Max Hall, Richard Bartell, John Navarre, and Kevin Cobb.
Yikes.
Said AB doesn't realize how good he's had it with Big Ben.
Right.
Well, he's right.
Yes, I agree.
That part of it is absolutely correct.
So we've talked a lot about Antonio Brown this offseason. We've talked a lot about Nick Foles this offseason. And I wanted to throw this into the news that Les Bowen of the Philadelphia Inquirer was one of many over the weekend that said the Jaguars are expected to sign Nick Foles. He said it the strongest. Rap Sheet mentioned it. Mike Garofalo mentioned it. Somehow, everyone who was in Indianapolis and talking to people came away saying this combination, Foles and the Jaguars, that everyone thinks is going to happen. Yeah, it is going to happen. Nothing's getting in the way.
I'm not sure we needed a report to tell us what we already expected to happen.
But I mean,
the report says exactly what we've said
just,
on this podcast.
It's just inching
the Jaguars are expected to sign him.
But it's just inching you closer and closer, and it's like
it's
they talk to someone.
I think it's different because it's sourced. That they're right. saying a source, and you can connect the dots with Foles because it's coming from the Philadelphia papers, that like, okay, everyone's been speculating about this, but actually there was some pushback in Jacksonville. There wasn't any really hard reporting, Wes. And this, now everyone's just kind of joining in.
This is
saying,
not
like,
hard
yes.
reporting. Expected to sign is not hard reporting.
He said he's expected to sign,
right?
According
which
to
is what
source.
We've been saying on this podcast.
Well,
I would say we sourced it too. I'm the source. I expect him to sign.
Well, I'm going to put it and say Nick Foles and his people are expecting to sign there. That's a little different.
Rap Sheet said he would not rule out the Dolphins, and there is significant interest in Foles around the league.
Hmm. I mean, that's because, number one, until it's final, why not allow someone else to come in with a whole different deal? The immediate loser, and not for me because I'm not one of these like NFC East people, but the television, the schedule makers, the primetime matchups that would have had potentially like a New York Giants placed Nick Foles
yes.
versus Philly, the games that we've talked about the last couple weeks that would have been front and center on the primetime slate.
I'm not giving up on the Giants or even the Raiders or someone surprising getting in.
Oh, I've given up on the Giants are with Eli.
Seems like it.
The Giants don't seem
to
have one
mind. I want a world that like chaos happens and crazy things happen next week. Next week's the week. This isn't the week.
Well, I mean, the Giants they make all their decisions based on what will happen to the future Eli Manning statue they're going to build, so I don't know what's going to happen there.
All right, Wes was underwhelmed with that item of news. Can
no, I just
can
don't
I
think
interest
it's a hard news.
You
like,
in
expected
a little,
is not hard news.
Can I interest you in another piece of expected news, which is that the Chiefs are going to tag Dee Ford, but here's the unexpected part from Rappaport again, that they will listen to offers for Dee Ford, that they are kind of putting him on the trade block. What do we think?
So this made me think that with Steve Spagnuolo, they're switching to a 4-3 defense.
Well, yeah, they announced that.
Yeah,
right.
They are.
That's official.
Dee Ford has been great coming off the edge as an outside linebacker.
Right.
And a lot of times that skill set transfers to defensive end in a 4-3, but it's not exactly the same.
No.
And maybe they don't think that Dee Ford's going to be quite the terror off the edge if he's playing defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, he had 12 sacks in 2016, but three of his other seasons have 2-4 and 2 sack totals. And he's only graded positively this past season on PFF. And he had a couple years where he was not even on the radar. So long-term commitment.
He had a really good season 2 years ago.
That 2016. I'm wondering if maybe the idea of a huge long-term financial commitment with a scheme change is put it all together and see what you can get for him.
I thought he is a perfect candidate for a tag even before they were changing schemes because of what you just said. I mean, he's had basically 2 years where he looked like a bust. 1 year in 2016 where he looked like an all-pro like he did this year for about 6 or 7 games. That was where he filled up that season. Then he got hurt and was playing through it and didn't really – so he has not been consistent at all. And now the fact that they're listening to the offers makes me think there's a good chance he's going to be traded because it makes me think they've decided – well, we'll pay him this year, but he's probably never going to sign long-term with us with the scheme change, so we might as well listen to see if we can get a second-round pick for him. And I would think in this market where there's so much money available, some team will give up a decent pick for Dee Ford and sign him to a big contract.
I think so, too. And then you have to – they also talked about moving Justin Houston potentially. Well, this was in many ways not a good defense last year. Their pass rush was effective. Like, what are we replacing these people with?
That's a great point because Houston is supposed to get traded or released over the next week. We think that'll happen. We'll have to wait and see on Ford. But while we're talking tags, let's do a little tag roundup here. On Monday, we got news of 3 tags. Jadeveon Clowney going to be tagged. Donovan Smith of the Bucks, their left tackle, tagged. And then DeMarcus Lawrence, no surprise, they're not going to get a deal done before the tag deadline, which is Tuesday, and he will be tagged as well. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, the Lawrence and Clowney tags are no-brainers and were expected to happen. Donovan Smith, that name has been bandied about for the last few weeks in Tampa Bay as likely getting the tag. And in this case, I think the franchise tag actually helps the player. He's going to get paid more than he's worth.
Right. He's going to make $15 or $16 million. He's one of those guys that PFF thinks is terrible. And that his own team.
One of those guys that Chris Wessling watches get worked over by speed rushers almost every game.
I was going to mention, he's one of those rare guys, one of those guys that PFF seems to hate. Like, that he's literally one of the worst starters, and that the team is always saying, oh, yeah, we love Donovan Smith. Great. We're going to, you know, he's terrific. But that when you watch the games, it seems like Jameis Winston is always under pressure from people who are going up against Donovan Smith. So I don't know what the Bucs are seeing that we're not.
Is it just also because if you remove him or he goes somewhere else, you're even that farther up the creek trying to find a left tackle, and they're just not out
there? I get it, but like last year when I was doing like the cuts list, I was like, I wanted to put Donovan Smith on it because he was going to get that fifth-year option, and it seems like he's not, you know, very good at professional football.
I think,
but I don't know. I do on some level still trust like NFL coaching staffs. It's like they must know something more that he's okay.
Yeah, I think that when you look at what their offense has done, the way they've moved the ball, especially between the 20s, I think a lot of teams put a high value on a guy who is decent enough that he won't sabotage the offense single-handedly. Mm.
And the general manager essentially is bulletproof in Tampa Bay.
Right. I mean, it can't be for much longer.
I don't know.
But they
did
just hire a new coach. I think Jason Light's got to win sooner than later. I know. I was thinking with the DeMarcus Lawrence tag today. That's no surprise, but what a great 12 months he's had. I went back. You know, I do some journal work sometimes. Dan's not the only insider on this podcast, and I wish I could bring it up. I mean, he's the only, like, real insider, like, in terms of media.
He's not even a real insider.
But voice memos that I have on my phone saved, DeMarcus Lawrence from March 13th last year. I went back and listened to it because I thought I remembered he said something, which I never ended up writing about. And he said, I'm fine playing under the tag, but I'm going to be more expensive next year than I am this year. So they would be served well by signing me to a contract this summer. He had no rancor about it. He just said, I'm going to be more expensive next year than I am right now. I promise you that. And you know what? He is way more expensive now than he was a year ago, not just because he had a great year, but because they're a tire fire in that front line with Randy Gregory suspended, David Irving now is suspended.
I'm a little disappointed that when you pulled out your phone and showed us your messages, you pointed to DeMarcus Lawrence. I thought for sure we were getting like DeMarcus Lawrence called you personally to clear something up.
No.
And instead, it's like you taped something on TV.
I mean, it's interesting that you kept
that
too.
He was here. He was here.
Oh, he was here. Okay.
He was here in the building. One of those like, hey, you want to go talk to DeMarcus Lawrence for 6 minutes while he eats like a sandwich? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
So you did personally speak to him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you ever just play those like late at night to yourself when you can't sleep? DeMarcus Lawrence interview segments that you've kept on your phone?
Not so much like a when I can't sleep, but just like if I really want to treat myself, like kind of light a candle, put some music on, some essential oils.
Your husband talking to a pro football player.
I think Greg sleeps well.
I do sleep well. I am a little disturbed, though. When I was looking for that the other day, I went back and deleted everything. The only things I kept were DeMarcus Lawrence. There were a couple things from this last combine I haven't deleted yet. And then an epic performance by Brassy at your house, Chris Wessling. I can't lose that. I don't know what that is, but for some reason I decided to record her.
I'd publish it.
I have a series of Brassy videos from several nights at my house.
Brassy, of course, is the social coordinator of our entire news operation. I would say she's, you know, recovering from some sort of hangover, I'm sure.
The Super Bowl, then right into combine for her were, from what I gather, there were a lot of high points, but you know, potentially you're paying the price.
But I'm gonna keep those as blackmail. It's gonna be okay.
Well, that is the relationship that you and she have, so I think that's good.
I mean, I was having dinner at the Combine with a friend, and then Tiffany Blackman, our friend on the network, sat down with us, and then suddenly some tequila shots are just sent over, and it's like you don't even have to guess who it's from. It's from Shona.
I would have gone with Reggie Bush, but
– no, he wasn't there.
Either one.
He wasn't there. All right, let's move on. Eagles, they're a team that's looking to sign some contracts. A lot of contract and salary cap issues these days. They brought back Brandon Graham on a huge deal, 3 years, $40 million, I think 20-plus in the first couple of years, all guaranteed. They also signed guard Isaac Ciamalo today and to a three-year deal. That was a bit of a surprise. And there's a report that Michael Bennett is on the trade block. Mark, you can take it any direction you want. Graham, Ciamalo, Bennett. It would be surprising if you went Ciamalo, but it's your option.
I mean, I'm not going Ciamalo. I think that the Bennett thing is just the natural reverb to giving $13 million a year to Graham, who's 31. Bennett's 33. Bennett costs another $7 million this year. Is there a team in worse cap hell right now than the Eagles? I believe they have the least amount of cash at the moment. So they got to make moves.
They have a lot of things. They just have a million things going on, and they're pretty good at being flexible, but you're right. They are about as tight to the cap and having to make tough choices as any team in the league.
Brandon Graham takes one of the better pass rushers off the market, but I think for me, what surprises me is that over all the coaching changes and scheme changes in Philadelphia for a guy who's never had a double-digit sack season, he's a great pass rusher, but most of that is coming on pressure, not sacks. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised that he's going to end up playing his entire career with the Eagles.
Well, you have to be a badass to get that third huge contract. To get when he signed that first five-year deal, I believe it was, with the Eagles at the end of his rookie contract, people were like, oh, really? You think Brandon Graham is that good that you're going to give him a five-year, $55 million contract? He made it to the end. That, like, never happened in the NFL. So they evaluated him well. And you're right. It's kind of a score for the pressure is almost as valuable as sacks and hits kind of brigade. And I think
that brigade,
I'm just saying, like, that's more valued now. They're a very analytics heavy type of organization. And I think they think he's a badass. And it's a guy that kind of like Everson Griffin is very similar in my mind in Minnesota, just the kind of career he's had, where it's like nationally not that well known, but the team that has him thinks he's a superstar.
He's also etched into like Philadelphia lore for the strip sack that helped win the Super Bowl. And, you know, I mean, Michael Bennett was not.
Right. That's so fair. That's a good point. And seems like a great guy, like very well known in the community and the locker room and all that sort of stuff.
Well, the guy we're going to have on later, Josh Norris from RotoWorld, has often said one of his biggest truisms: disruption is production.
Whoa. That's a catchphrase. I mean, that's how you step on a lot of people at the RotoWorld offices and become one of the real big stars. I mean, you think Norris has gotten to where he is without a little bloodless coup?
It's probably like some sort of alleyway showdown with, you know, Evan Silva, which would not be an easy takedown.
Evan Silva, the big fish, by the way, in Indianapolis. Did you know this, Mark?
He actually messaged me soon after and said, sorry that you were not there. I did not go out the final night.
We saw the big fish at St. Elmo's, the famous steakhouse that every sports writer talks about. And people were blown away. Dan was just like, wasn't really ready for the size and the stature that Silva's bringing to the table. I mean, Silva's like Jason Peters or something.
You're over Kevin Patras built, Wes. You've for a long time knocked that down.
Well, this
down.
Is different. This is like a big boy. This is like an NFL left tackle size.
Patra, you know, is in fine shape and always has been. I never would have looked at him as sort of like a paragon of male body type.
It's always
in fine shape.
Let's be real. It's always annoyed you a little bit how much credit Patra got for his body. And even back in the day, you almost were annoyed that he got the credit over, like, he's like, I have that body now.
No. I never thought that I deserved credit for my body. I never thought that at all.
Now, how are you feeling about it?
Now it's time for some credit.
I did not feel like my body is in great shape. I'll put it that way.
All right. We are almost to some combine rumors we aren't buying. Another little like mini seg we're throwing in here. But finally, Jamie Collins expected to be cut or traded soon. How would you remember the Jamie Collins era, Mark Sessler?
Very underwhelming. And I thought they got him for a relatively low acceptable draft pick. And then I think in one of these sort of confirming your own move, turn around and overpaid him, but they had a ton of cap space and they almost were at that place where they needed to reach the cap floor and they had no names on their defense. And I thought they probably felt like it was the first step towards building that side of the ball. And there have been, the thing that I kind of remember most are these sort of whispering jabs at him where you can't tell exactly where it's coming from, but people aren't happy with the effort. They aren't quite happy with the effort on game day or not on game day. And I don't feel like he fits into where they're going, and they definitely need help at linebacker, but I don't think they're going to re-up with him. That would be surprising to me.
This is one of those I usually at this point would expect a guy to get traded. Like Michael Bennett, he's due $6 million this year. I think they could find someone to at least do a pick swap for that. Why not? He's still pretty good. But Jamie Collins making $10 million.
No.
I don't think anyone wants to deal with that. I think he's
going to. I mean, it was the Patriots who were listed as a team that were open to potentially trading for him last season.
Right, and I think they would probably take Jamie Collins back, but why start at a $22 million two-year contract? I just don't think he has that sort of like value at this point. Finally, an idea Wes had here. Combine rumors, he's not buying. What is the combine rumor that's grinding your gears?
Well, it started – this wasn't really a rumor. Someone asked Kurt Warner what he would give up for Josh Rosen. He said a third-round pick. And then Peter King interviewed another NFL executive who said Cardinals shouldn't expect to get more than a third-round pick for him. And I think this is insane. I think that's crazy for many reasons, not least of which is the Cardinals have already paid 65% of what his rookie deal will be for 4 years. They've already paid most of it with upfront money. He's only going to count $2 million against your cap every year for the next 3 years. And you're telling me the teams like the Giants, Redskins, and Dolphins who need quarterbacks are saying, or even the Patriots who need a successor for Tom Brady are saying, no, I won't go above the 90-something pick in the draft for Josh Rosen. I just don't believe that for a second.
I mean, it depends what the team is. And who's drafting him with everyone knowing he's just going to be a long-term backup? Like, you're drafting him to be a starter. If it's the Redskins, who would make some sense, you can't possibly tell me that you're going to get Arizona to accept nothing more than a third-round pick for that when he is going to be your plug-and-play, low-cost starter.
Well, and Peter King, he talked to, I think, two front office guys. And, okay, those guys don't want to give up a third-round pick. That's fine. It only takes one team. You know what I mean? I don't get that at all. Like these.
It also depends what front offices those were.
You also hear all the time GMs who sign guys in free agency, and I think Dante Fowler is a good case study for this year. Well, we had him ranked really high coming out of college. You always hear this about first-round picks that then get to free agency and aren't playing that well. Well, we really loved his college tape, and we loved him, and that's – it's like, what, there's not a bunch of teams out there that didn't love Josh Rosen's college tape and wouldn't give it up? I would remain a Patriots fan if they go pick up Josh
Wait, what
Rosen.
What does this mean? I'm thinking about checking out as soon as Belichick and Brady are gone.
Well, you know that Brady. I'll stick it out for Belichick, but I think I might retire with Bill. I mean, how could you top that? It's just like you just live through the best. Why even bother? No, after
that's because
that?
That's not the definition of a fan is to jump ship the minute things.
I won't.
Run.
I won't
you
jump.
Summer
ship.
Soldier, you sunshine patriot. Oh, what are you doing?
You gave up on the Bengals.
I did not give up on them. They gave up on me. That's a big difference.
Here's the thing. I just think mentally it's possible that they just become like 1A of all the other teams, but it's just like not the same.
It is crazy where we even were 2 weeks ago with this Josh Rosen story where it was like largely unbelievable that this would even happen, and now it just seems like a foregone conclusion that the Cardinals have enough people.
I mean, that's changed even since we last talked on Thursday. So since then, okay, Kim Jones said the expectation – at this point around the league is that the Cardinals will take Kyler Murray. That's what everyone thinks.
I also don't believe this either. I don't believe the Cardinals have finished their due diligence.
That's what
made up their mind.
And a bunch of people like DJ and all these people are saying that's what everyone thinks. But no one really knows. That's just like – that's not really news necessarily. It's just what everyone thinks the Cardinals – and then possibly the Raiders are thinking as well. People – you know, there was a quote that Gruden's not much of a poker player – in that it's kind of obvious how much they like Kyler Murray as well.
But I think before, you know, he 2 weeks ago he's being mocked to go to the Redskins at 15 or falling out of the top 20 and stuff. Now it's like, no, this guy, like every single year, a couple quarterbacks are going to go way higher than people thought initially, and Kyler Murray has multiple NFL coaches super intrigued.
And I'm with you, Wes, by the way. I don't buy that for a second. Rosen's 21, 22 now. I mean, he came into the league young. His tape is not nearly as bad as everyone thinks. I promise you, he did more as a rookie than guys like, you know, Goff or Trubisky did in similar situations. I saw enough where I was like, okay, I saw some good things. I'm still on the Josh Rosen train.
So a lot of people who went broke trying to guess how good of a gambler other people are. I'm not that confident in anybody's ability to read a gambler.
Well, gambler.
What makes you an expert on reading John Gruden's – not you, but like anyone. What makes you an expert in reading John Gruden's gambling, and what makes you think that you're good enough to read it?
Right.
I think that, like, he's not just already broken you.
I think literal professional gamblers like are probably good at that skill, but I don't think that's who we're talking about here.
Right. I think there are a few people on earth who are really good at that.
But you're not a fan of the Combine, Wes, and the Combine essentially is like one massive hot stove league session where whispers and rumors and generated news reports are what this part of the football season's about.
I think it makes for a great quote for someone to say, John Gruden's a bad poker player. I just don't have any confidence in that person's ability to read John Gruden's poker play.
I'm with you. But
I mean, a year ago we thought the entire Raiders offense was going to run eternally through Amari Cooper. So he has an ability to spin yarns that we fall for.
That's a great point. You know who's a great poker player we found out this week? John Gonzalez. Colleen Wolf's husband was once almost a professional poker player.
I mean, he certainly seems to have the free time.
He was on like the early auspices of kind of like the poker professionalism going around. That's like, can't you just imagine him with his like hat pulled down low at a poker table, like taking people's money?
Man of many talents.
That was a low point in sports television when like every third sports network had like eight jabronis sitting around a table playing poker for 4 hours.
It was a mania, and it was exciting. It was an interesting time. I'm not
it's like Greg's youth.
No, I never was into poker. But when Roto World was started, way back in the day when we were building it brick by brick, this is even pre-wrestling. It was like 30 people all in about three rooms. Minimum 24 of them were betting on poker to an insane degree, and most of them seem to be making money from it, including the people who like own this company. People were like losing their minds just playing online poker all day every day and like just stealing money from some, you know, poor schlub in Nebraska who's signing on for this. It was the heyday.
It was a dark time, and I believe
seemed to be having fun though. I liked like the spirit of it. I didn't know how to do poker.
I think it's accurate that I would have moved to Tybee Island if not for the poker craze that swept the nation. Between poker and at the same time when MMA is becoming really big, and all of my softball buddies just wanted to sit around watching MMA and playing poker, and I gotta leave this city.
Yeah,
there is nothing here for me.
I mean, there were some like Christmases where there were rumors where the Roto World was having a little trouble paying the payroll. So as far as I'm concerned, poker might have saved us.
Sounds like a toxic environment.
You know, it might have been the only way that they were still making money, paying us, and now look at it today. Is there any other Combine rumors we were buying? That was pretty much mine, though.
Other one that I thought was absurd, just because everyone attached to the Redskins is fighting for their job right now, and I like Colt McCoy, the person. I named my son Colt after Colt McCoy the day that he was essentially replaced by Brandon Weeden being drafted in the first round, but the idea that they're talking up Colt McCoy as the starter, to me that's all that says is if all our other plans don't work, then we have it on paper that we're excited about Colt McCoy. That cannot honestly be where this team is coming from holistically to fix their quarterback situation. It's just, hey, we said it. If this is what we wind up with, we told you all along we were excited about this. That, to me, is just not a rumor. It's just like it's good housekeeping.
Well, I do believe that Jay Gruden thinks more highly of Colt McCoy than anyone else in the NFL thinks of Colt McCoy. But I also think you cannot have followed this guy's career and believe that he's going to stay healthy for more than two or three games.
He's coming off a broken leg.
He's always coming off of something because he always gets hurt.
Right. I dig him, but he's like, he's been in the perfect position as a backup that
Absolutely.
You hope to use a game a year at most.
There's like no doubt to me that he's going to be Jay Gruden's quarterback coach on the 2020 six. What team is Jay Gruden?
Bengals,
coach?
Not Redskins.
Bengals, yes.
Yeah.
That it would be the Bengals or the offensive coordinator. He's getting paid Colt McCoy, by the way, $3.6 million. So that kind of, or no, $3.3 million. That shows what they think of him. They think he's a backup.
They think he's the best backup in the NFL, or one of the best.
That's what it is.
And I think that's fair. He's a really good backup,
and he fits Jay Gruden and all that. But don't conflate it into he's suddenly our starter.
Okay, so that's the news. And a lot of chunky content there, a lot to digest, frankly. And before we get to some more real like nuts and bolts, meat and potato football, We're just going to have a little bit of a palate cleanser and something that really doesn't have a name to it, but it's just 1 minute of talking about a memorable sporting event that we witnessed with the backing music of our choice. And since this was my idea, I can start.
Pick it up.
Kent, you ready? Let's do it. I haven't heard this yet. Oh, that's nice. All right. I'm going to go 1988. Foxborough Stadium, Sullivan Stadium, they would call it. Doug Flutie, New England Patriots, gets the ball in the red zone late. Just fell down about 4 points to a rookie, Chris Chandler, of the Indianapolis Colts. Doug Flutie comes in. Gosh, who was he replacing? A total bum. He comes in off the bench to replace Gus Ramsey. A total bum. Leads them to victory on a bootleg. The moment everyone in Boston was waiting for, Flutie to become the Patriots head coach. And that place celebrated like it was a Super Bowl. And I always remember that game. It's one of the only Patriots games I've ever been to as a kid. We didn't go often. That seemingly meaningless wins to get to 2-3 in a lost season can mean so much to fans in the NFL. Because that game meant so much to me. We ate off that game for about 5 years.
I love that music. That was a good music choice.
That minute snuck up quickly, but
that's good to know.
Yeah, it was good. But I mean, it's like, thanks, Tom. Tom Rosenthal, not a huge football guy. More baseball, basketball. But we loved. I loved football and brought me to that. And it's like, I'm going over my minute here. I'm still talking.
No, that's all right. Sometimes it has to be unpacked further.
All right, Mark. Let's go next.
All right, so I have seen Michael Jordan play live. I've been to multiple Super Bowls with you guys, which, I mean, honestly, those are the incredible moments. When I really was thinking about one sporting event that changed my life, when I was in Ithaca College in 1993, I had a sort of a humorous, roundish guy that lived next door to me who was, like, trying to graduate early, but he needed to pass this fencing class. He was in fencing. And so it was a fencing final where I was going to go watch him in this tournament. The final was a tournament, and you had to come in like top up to get a good grade. Otherwise, you're in trouble. We went out to eat lunch, and he got on this long wandering story about this girl he liked on the third floor, this totally unimpressive girl. And I was trying to talk him off the ledge, but here we go. There's only 18 more seconds. He went to the fencing class late, and the teacher's like, "You're out. You get an F. You can't be late."
Oh,
no. And he said, "You know what? Forget the F. I'll take the F, but I'm going to do the tournament." And he knocked out this girl in the first round, blew up some long-haired dude in the second round, got to the finals and lost. But she basically said, "You know what? I love the effort. You get a B-. So he saved his grade, and to me, that was one of the things where you could just mope and leave and wander home.
Life lesson.
Said, I'm doing it. I'm fighting this tournament. And he destroyed these people. I love
life
it.
Life lesson. This is why I'm glad I left it wide open. It didn't have to be the greatest sporting event you ever win. It's just something memorable.
Love to came back from the brink.
Nobody on earth could have predicted that you were going to go down that avenue.
No one saw it.
Well, you gave me a heads up yesterday, so I thought long and hard on a Sunday, Greg, about
that. No one saw fencing coming. All right, Wes.
We're going back.
You're up.
Same year as you, Greg. 1988. The Reds have a pitching prospect. Frustrating but talented. 6'5", 240. He looked like a combination of Ralph Mouth from the Happy Days and Frankenstein. He had red, wavy hair. It was receding. And he was an ugly dude. Pete Rose had nicknamed him the True Creature. We just called him the Creature as kids. We're at this game because it's the Kid Glove game in Cincinnati. The one game a year that all the little leaguers get to go to. Mm. This guy is one pitch away from a perfect game in the ninth inning. Two outs, two strikes. Wallace Johnson of the Montreal Expos serves a soft liner into left field, breaks up the perfect game, and Rock Raines hits a two-run homer. Ron Robinson, the Creature, doesn't even get to finish the game. John Franco has to come in for the save. Robinson gets traded 2 years later, 2 months before the Reds win their last World Series that they've ever won. So this song is supposed to be some takeoff on Shattered Dreams by Johnny H. Jazz.
Okay.
Remember Johnny H. Jazz, the one-hit wonder? Shattered Dreams in 1988 for the Creature.
Oh. Well, you guys did a much better job than I did.
I thought they were all good.
That was fun.
That minute is – that thing
– It was quickly. Well, what was your kind of musical inspiration, Mark? Just because I loved it, and it was –
Well, I know that our library is a wild card, but I sort of wanted – like medieval into like gallants, like a sword fight type thing. I think you did a nice job, Kent.
No, I thought it was really good. It was like firing me up. I mean, I blew it. It was Tom Ramsey, by the way.
Shattered Dreams.
Tom Ramsey was the quarterback who was the replacement for Steve Grogan. I mean, what? You couldn't make Flutie the backup? He was a third stringer? Give me a break.
Yeah, whenever you search, like, swords or swords fights, it's just a lot of, like, metallic clanging, and I figured the medieval stuff worked a little bit.
No,
thank
that was,
you.
That,
thank
was,
you,
that was beautiful.
Those were some interesting stories, I have
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, I think we can do it again. I mean, it doesn't need to be a sporting event. It could be 1 minute on anything.
As it happens, in May of 88, while that game was going on, Shattered Dreams was climbing the U.S.
Wow. It was kismet. All right, also kismet. Josh Norris, he's been watching the combine for how many days has it been? Probably about 96 hours straight, because that's just like what he does. They have podcasts literally every day during the combine at Roto-World. He's pumping out content. The big fish is now kind of taking it easy during the combine. He's making Josh do all the work.
Breaking news.
Oh, we got a little breaking news.
Add another franchise tag to the mix. Multiple national reporters are reporting that Frank Clark is getting the franchise tag from the Seattle Seahawks.
Ouch. Okay. Well, I mean, Pete Carroll over and over and over said he is not leaving the building.
Yes. Basically, all those guys on our top 101 list at the top that we thought were going to get tagged have.
Tom Pelissero and Peter Schrager have confirmed. Expected to use the franchise tag.
So Landon Collins, to me, is the only real wild card right now that we don't know which way it's going to go. At this point, I'd be very surprised if Trey Flowers did get the tag, even though I would support it and think it's a good move. It seems like no one believes that's going to happen. So Landon Collins seems to be kind of the one guy everyone's waiting for. We'll find that out later in the week. But before waiting any longer, you know, I gave him the big preamble. Let's get to Josh Norris.
Hello?
Josh, what's going on?
Yes. I mean, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. We're on. You are on with the Around the NFL podcast. I think we're just going to jump right into it. I don't need to give the flowery preamble any longer. I already talked you up enough how you've stepped over so many people at Roto-World to get to the position that you're in, and then now trying to push Evan Silva aside. You know, I admire the hustle.
Hopefully, guys, this doesn't turn into something like where my parents call me at 9:30 p.m. asking me how to work their remote control for their television. I'm excited to talk athletic testing with you.
Wow. Well, what does that mean? That they're going to try to listen to this podcast? I don't quite follow.
No. As in, they don't understand, you know, updated modern technology.
Oh, and we don't. And you're saying we, as simpletons, don't understand what's going on with the test? No, you're pretty much right. I mean, the title of this segment is Combine Takeaways We Don't Have a Strong Grasp On, but Josh Norris does. You're with Chris Wesseling and Mark Sessler as well.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
My favorite trio.
I was just telling all of our listeners that disruption equals production. Is that a Josh Norris original?
It is. It was from a Jadeveon Clowney article back in the day, back when, you know, he was getting knocked for his sacks, and I'm sure you guys talk about that all the time, how sacks really aren't the end-all be-all, but
we were talking about Brandon Graham's new deal, that he's a disruption equals production guy.
There we go. And back at South Carolina with Clowney, like, he was the only one getting 4 yards in the backfield, and the quarterback could just move around and avoid his line to the quarterback. So that's where disruption equals production came.
Wow. It's great to get the etymology here.
From
the creator himself. Yeah, I don't know what you exactly think we're going to talk about here, Josh, because I did ask you, you know, hey, is there any names you want to talk about, you know, before the show? And then you sent me like a 4-part breakdown of why the measurements that you use are superior to the ones that are often talked about. And frankly, it went over my head. I just kind of wanted to hear like who did well at the combine or not. Like, pretend like you're speaking to, you know, total simpletons. I just want to know, like,
don't pretend.
Like Rashawn Gary. Like, what do you think about Rashawn Gary? You know, aren't you a little worried he didn't produce it all after watching?
There's only a handful of times in my life I'll be able to talk to the heroes. So I thought I would try to put my best step forward, my best foot forward, and do my best in this regard. So.
Okay. Well, you're off to a great start.
Can I ask about some specific guys?
I think the best way to start this conversation, if I can kind of take control here, Greg,
is
to kind of explain why, in my opinion, the combine matters and like why athletic testing matters.
Okay.
Because back in before like 2015, I didn't think it mattered at all. Because it's kind of how the combine is broadcast in some ways, where for 4 days, it's, you know, 40-yard dashes and their position drills, right? So we all kind of equate athleticism to a 40-yard dash when really there's six or seven other tests that can be factored into someone's athletic profile, right? And then combine that with weight, because there's a major difference in, you know, a 184-pound receiver running a 4.45 versus a 225-pound receiver running a 4.45, right?
Right.
Kind of gives you a composite score. And that composite score allows you to compare across decades and across players at the same position as well.
So who stuck out to you? Who is, like, towards the top of the draft? For instance, to use your example, actually, DK Metcalf, you know, everyone was talking about his performance this weekend. But then I saw, like, a note about how his three-cone drill was actually worse than Tom Brady's three-cone drill, that here is the most athletic, amazing freak you've ever seen. But actually, in this in this measurement, he was worse than 2000 Tom Brady. So, like, how do you put that all together? What's your takeaway from all that?
Yeah, and let me first say that, at least for me, watching games is the most important piece of evaluations. But if we can just, like, add tools to the toolbox here to hopefully improve evaluations and hit on players at multiple days of the draft, like, that's the only goal here. With DK Metcalf, it's interesting because you mentioned it. Like, his 40 was outstanding. His jumps were amazing at 40.5-inch vert, over 11-foot broad jump at 228 pounds. But then, like, his three-cone was in, like, the fifth percentile, and his short shuttle was in, like, the third percentile. If we can go back and kind of look at players that were somewhat similar in that regard, a Stephen Hill pops out, a Greg Childs pops out. I'm not necessarily going to put Kevin White in that regard, but if you go back and look at Ole Miss, it was a somewhat similar offense that Kevin White ran back at West Virginia, whereas he was locked into one side of the field. Everything was run on that kind of linear plane, straight lines, and then outside breaking routes off of that. And so it's not that type of offense where you see him run all the routes, do everything across the formation, line up in different areas of the field. And so that would give you pause. But obviously,
Mark just threw up in his mouth a little bit.
I mean, but he has huge muscles. So can we just sort of wipe all this away and just someone draft him at like 13?
Wasn't Childs the guy who tore both patellar tendons?
Well, yeah. I do think it is important to note here, though, that like athletic testing can also help you determine if what you saw in games is actually something that actually exists, okay? Because, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but my eyes lie to me at points. Like going back to Jarvis Jones, for example.
Mine are right all the time,
Yeah, we know that Jarvis Jones led the SEC in sacks during his final year at Georgia. I mean, he was an outstanding player there, right?
Former Steelers first-round pick.
There we go. And actually, when he went through his athletic testing, Jarvis Jones tested like the worst first-round pick of all time, okay, since this has been tracked, like in the bottom 10th percentile, okay? And as we have known and seen, Jarvis Jones didn't have a very long career. So just because the production was there, part of that, and especially if it's those edge rushers and defensive linemen, like to me, that's where athleticism is most significant, right? Like it's one of the true one-on-one matchups on the NFL playing field. And so at the very least, in its simplest form, wouldn't athletic advantage give you a step up on your opponent? And Jarvis Jones wasn't even average in that regard, and average is fine. He was well below average. And in many ways, staying away from non-NFL caliber athletes is how we should use athletic testing.
Let me ask you the flip side of this. So guys like Montez Sweat, who just had one of the best combines ever for a defensive end slash edge rusher, and Rashawn Gary, who had a very good combine, both are being sort of criticized for not being quite as good on the field or for having game tape.
Right.
I know Sweat, I believe, was ranked in the 80s by PFF. Where would these guys fall for you? Do you have faith in them?
Yes. And my bias, again, as I mentioned, towards edge rushers, interior defensive linemen with athleticism, I think maybe the best example in previous years was Danelle Hunter. And I think part of it kind of comes down to the type of coaching they get once they reach the NFL. Hunter was an absolute awful pass rusher in college at LSU. He's a great run defender when he goes and is one of the best athletes in his class and drafted in the third round and has become one of the best edge rushers in the league, in my opinion. Do I think that Rashawn Gary and Montez Sweat have that potential? Sure. A big part of that is obviously the system and situation that they land in. But with Sweat, he's someone that can get up the field in a hurry. That obviously matches his athletic testing. His first two or three steps are outstanding. And when you face those heavy-footed offensive tackles, it can be fairly easy to run past them. Now, does he have that bend like Von Miller? No. But again, if I'm trying to invest in a first-round edge rusher or a first-round interior defensive lineman, the goal is get after quarterback and win a one-on-one matchup, yeah, I would absolutely love them to have a superior, and in these cases, the 94th percentile of athletic profile.
Is there can I just shift to quarterbacks for a second? Because
yeah.
I really don't have – I'm not able to do much more at the combine than hopefully see the quarterbacks for a couple seconds. The rest of it is just a white haze, and then I catch up with it later. But when it comes to outside of the Kyler Murray, is there a quarterback that's caught your eye that you feel like is going to be someone that could surprise everyone? Or is that not the case, which is fine also?
Well, as we know, if a quarterback gets taken outside of round one, there's really very little hope for them in general. It's kind of true.
Yeah, it's not. You can point to various little.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah,
it's the exception rather than the rule.
That's fair. Right.
But this exception that proves the rule.
There's plenty of decent second and thirds out there. They're out
not
there.
Not really. There have been throughout history.
Like Russell Wilson. But currently, I'm counting Andy Dalton to me is a draft hit. If you got a guy who starts that many games in the second round, or Kaepernick for that matter.
Unless you're
that
a Bengals fan, but yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? Those guys matter, and those weren't first-round picks. But I hear you, especially in today's NFL. It doesn't seem to happen too often.
Right. It kind of puts
Garoppolo.
You in purgatory, though, if you want to stay in those situations, right, and don't want to improve off of them.
Right.
Now, with that said, I will go to someone that is not going to be taken in the first round. And I'll go to Easton Stick out of North Dakota State. We all know that that's the system that Carson Wentz came out of, and Easton ran the exact same one. So if you go
– great name.
Went and yeah, right? Should be a hockey player.
Named after a baseball bat.
He is. There you go. And if you have watched Wentz back in his college days, you saw everything was under center, a lot of things out of shotgun, off-play action, moving out of structure, inside of structure. Easton Stick could do all of that. Now, he did not have a good East-West Shrine Week, but to me, Stick is someone – look, if there's a Taylor Heinicke out there as a backup quarterback in the league, if Alex Tanny is a backup quarterback in the league, it makes no
Matt
sense
Castle.
To me that someone like – yeah, right? Easton Stick should easily be a backup quarterback in the league. Mm. He's a lot of fun to go and watch in those YouTube highlight clips if you want.
I like it. I'm all over this Easton Stick scenario. I'm going to track this heavily.
That's the name of Mark's next son. Finally, Stanley Morgan Jr., can he live up to the name? That was the name of my fantasy football team for years and years, was just Stanley Morgan. So can he live up to that? What are your thoughts?
Is this the wide receiver out of Nebraska?
That's right. His dad is one of the great speedsters in Patriots history.
All right, Greg. I am great at knowing what I don't know, and I'm just going to tell you I know very little about Stanley Morgan.
Okay,
maybe that's some homework that I can have.
He didn't make a big impact.
He did have 88th percentile, so you have a very good athlete on your hands there in Stanley Morgan.
There's a player I really want to know about. I have a buddy who goes by the name Spice Rack, who is a big college football fan and, fancies himself as a bit of a draft expert himself. And during the season, he told me that I am going to fall in love with Lil Jordan Humphrey out of Texas. He said he's just a big playmaker. This dude ran a 4.75 at the combine. Please tell me why my friend talked him up so much, and is he an NFL wide receiver?
Yeah, I have no idea. Look, he didn't fall even with that 4.75. He didn't fall out into that non-NFL caliber athlete territory. But if we're talking about players you should get excited about at 6'4", over 200 pounds, he's certainly not at the top of that list in this group. We have a ton of massive wide receivers. They're a lot of fun. Instead of wasting your time and watching Lil John Humphrey or whatever his name is.
Lil Jordan, which I think is a great name. He's not quite Michael Jordan. He's just Lil Jordan.
In Spice Rack's defense, he is standing on the table for Dwayne Haskins. Not that he's the only person in the world that's doing that right now, but it is convinced Haskins is going to be the next or one of the next great NFL quarterbacks.
Well, instead of wasting your time with Mr. Jordan, I would watch some Akeem Butler out of Iowa State. This is a super fun player. you look at, you know, big wide receivers, 6'5", 220 plus pounds, and like naturally they think, you think that you can do like Alshon Jeffrey type stuff, right? Just,
or at least Jonathan Baldwin
catches. Right. But what Hakeem Butler does, he shows you elements of the small game as well. Mm. Like you turn on that Iowa game, and in like a fourth down scenario, he runs a whip route along the sideline and creates instant separation, like getting low in his breaks, creating that space. And that's just not something you see out of receivers out of his size. We're going to have a whole discussion about him and drops, but like that's an overrated discussion as well. But yeah, definitely go and watch Hakeem Butler. You'll like what you see.
I'm sorry, Josh, for, you know, throwing you that Stanley Morgan curveball here, but otherwise I think you knocked it out of the park. I think if people did happen to just like miss the previous 4 days and 32 hours of coverage we had on NFL Network, I think the last 15 minutes probably made it up for you. I mean, I think we covered
it. We covered it.
We have every
bit of it. Well, Greg, if I can just plug my own podcast here.
I already did, Josh. Don't you worry about it.
Well, I'll have a full combine recap on there if you want to, you know, if we missed on anything of the last 50 minutes, which, you know, might not have happened.
No.
You're grinding 6 days in a row with podcasts.
No,
I don't let anyone here know about that.
No, that's why I wanted you on. Josh does an awesome job with the really kind of cavalcade of stars that you have run through that show. Josh is smart. He's kind of the main one, and then the rest just rotate, so everyone knows who's the most important.
So he's the sun, and they're the planet.
Right, and so different guys come on different days and all that, and it is really good. Roto World football podcast, you know, they started it too late, but they've made up for lost ground. I know you were pushing for it for years before they let you start it. That's the only reason why I'm saying
Greg, there's no money in podcasting.
Right. Except for us. We're just drowning in it.
Yeah.
Drowning in it. All right. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
See ya. Bye. So that was Josh Norris. And before we go, we do have one last item of breaking news.
We got three items of breaking news.
All right. Let's let Wes do
it. For heaven's sakes.
Well, first of all.
This better be real.
The Falcons announced that they are franchise tagging Grady Jarrett, their defensive tackle.
Yep.
Adam Schefter has been told that C.J. Mosley will not be franchise tagged by the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm.
And Rap Sheet is reporting that Landon Collins is not expected to draw the franchise tag from the Giants.
Wow. We forecast that before anyone, the Landon Collins news.
Let me change
the wording. Wes has got another one.
Rap Sheet, the wording is the Giants are, quote, viewed as unlikely.
Okay. Well, we got 24 hours. So at this point, he's probably not getting the tag. He's going to get very close to the top of our rankings. Grady Jarrett, that's no surprise. He was ranked he was our number 3 player overall. So that is no surprise.
I mean, you do this top 100 list and it's a wonderful thing, but then it's like immediately burned to a crisp.
Absolutely.
Where like the only name value products on the entire thing are held by their own teams.
No, I mean, yeah, you know most of them are going to go, but we're going to have Le'Veon Bell. You're right. The top is now going to be Le'Veon Bell, Earl Thomas, Trey Flowers, Foles, Landon Collins. I mean, that we've had much worse years at the top. I'll put it that way.
Well,
we had a year where it was like Malik Jackson and then like, you know, Kelechi Osemele or something.
One could make the point that our timing of the release and updates is suspect. That maybe we should wait until after the franchise tags are in before we do this project?
No, people want to know. They want to start thinking. You know, it's all about the page views. You know, they're getting more.
Well, I mean, right.
You're
one
saying
could,
for the user
could
experience.
One can make the point that absent the page views,
yeah.
Like the top 10 guys on your list every year are generally the top 2 guys on
right.
your list.
Well, it's a good discussion to have. And CJ Mosley.
I'd reboot the entire project and give it to 2 other people. Dan and Mark.
Mosley's interesting. He's the one that I think they really want to keep him, and it's a rare case. I think if I had to guess, I bet they still will find a way to keep him, even though they're not going to tag him.
They just don't want to start the discussions at $15 million a year.
Right, and I don't blame him for an inside linebacker. Maybe the Browns will steal him. I don't know why. That just feels
There's
like
been
something.
They've got some cash.
That just feels cash. Like a guy who's just going to like come in and improve the culture and make your opponent.
I mean, he ended their season with an interception, so.
Mm.
It'll help him out a little.
It all comes back around. All right. On Wednesday, we will be back. We have a Twitter show early this week. I believe it's airing early unless we're pre-taping it. It is airing at 10:30 Pacific, 1:30 Eastern time, and then we are taping the podcast after that. We will also be back with the podcast Friday morning. Dan will be back on Wednesday for Mark Sessler, The Quiet Storm. Chris Wesseling. Mailman, that's it. Kent Brown. Josh Norris. Evan Silva. Everyone. We'll see you Wednesday.